We're so grateful that Chris Sherrick has joined us today. He has brought some handouts for you to acquaint you a little bit with the support system for electric cars, where the electric charging stations are, and he's going to share with us a variety of other things. He has written a book on this subject, and I'm going to interview Chris for just a minute or two so you get to know him better. So, Chris, join me, please. And Chris, tell me a little bit about your professional education.
I'm an environmental engineer. I went to school on the east coast of Florida. I was born in Panama City, so I'm a Florida native. But I went to school to fix problems. That was the reason I went to school. Not real happy with the way my parents left the earth to me. So that's why I wanted to be an environmental engineer. And I went to school in Orlando. Came right out of school over here. I've been here for 15 years working as an environmental engineer, mostly on utilities in the southwestern Florida area.
Wow. I've heard lots of cliches and commercials about what are our kids going to say about how we're leaving the world for them. That's a commentary.
Yes.
That's a commentary. And then tell us a little bit about what you do routinely, how you got involved with the electric cars, and how your book is part of that.
Well, 2011, I went and visited a friend in Iceland. I went to school with him in Orlando, and he's from Iceland, and we went to visit, and we did the Ring Road. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Iceland, but they've got this really neat road, goes all the way around, and you're really not supposed to do that in March, but we did in an old 2001 Dodge Durango, and we got 11 miles to the gallon, and I spent $1,000 on gas at $8 a gallon in Iceland, which is the typical price for gasoline over there. And I came back to the States, and I came back to my Jeep that I've had forever. I've had multiple SUV Jeeps, 11 miles per gallon. I just said, I can't do this anymore. I had been following the development of this particular vehicle, the Chevy Volt that I've had, and I put my order in for one. They weren't selling it in Florida, but I put my order in for one and ordered it from another state, and I got it in May of 11. So I've had it over 2.5 years now and driving this car.
Wonderful. And then tell me a little about your book.
Well, I got tired of people telling me about how great their Prius was. That was really the reason it really bothered me for a couple reasons. I mean, one, 50 miles per gallon is great. 50 miles per gallon is good. But I'm getting over 200 miles a gallon with this Volt. And I was struggling with, this is last fall, I was struggling with how do I share this information? I get so many questions from people about the car that I thought I need to just put all this in a book. And I started developing the book, and I remembered meeting at the charging station. I met the mayor at the charging station downtown, Palm Avenue Garage, and I met Stephen King. And I reached out to him through his assistant, and he gave me a really nice endorsement on the book. He's a big proponent of us reducing our use of foreign oil, and so that was kind of a neat thing that added a little bit of flavor to the book. So.
And if I were interested in the book, what would I want to know? And I'm not here to plug your book, but I just wanted to know, what would your book share with me?
Real-world data. There's three different things. One thing I wanted to do is give customers the confidence to go and buy these cars. Go drive one of these things. It's not a golf cart, and it's not a Jetsons. It is real. It has 8 airbags. It has 4 tires. I mean, just a regular old car, except it just doesn't use gas until you really need it. And so it's hopefully a buyer's guide. I didn't get paid by GM or anybody to write the book, and it's really more about electric vehicles than my particular Chevy. But I hope that it provides the real-world information. How much does it take? How many dollars does it take you to charge it at night? How much gas have you put in it? All that information is all in there to share with everyone. And then also some discussion about the future of electrics and where we're going as things progress.
Wow. Anyone that's interested, this is a good guide. I've got to get me one.
I'd be happy to email out the PDF. That doesn't cost me anything. So if you guys want to email me, I'll be more than happy to just send you the electronic file. It cost me $10 a pop to print these things for my mom. My mom said she had to have a hard copy, so I had to print some.
Yes.
But I use Servan Printing locally. And if you want to buy one, they're here. They're $15. For just the cost of the book, really.
That's fantastic. Well, I'll let you talk a little bit to your presentation and also to why electric cars are so important to how we're going to leave the earth for our children.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, Britton Cleveland, she's a local organizer, Southwest Florida, for the Sierra Club. She couldn't join me today. She got in her car this morning around 9 o'clock from St. Pete, and it wouldn't start, which I thought was almost kind of ironic because she drives an old gas guzzler Toyota Camry. So she's not able to be here, but I do have her presentation, thanks to the beauty of the internet. So we'll go through this this first half, and it's really more of a bigger picture issue, why electric vehicles, and we'll go through this. Take it easy on me on the questions on the first presentation, but certainly you can drill me hard on the questions on the second one, because that's more my specifics. So, Klaus, let's go ahead and, you know, there are four major reasons why electric vehicles, when Britton was given this presentation. I've heard her give this talk a couple different times, but one of the biggest is oil dependence, reducing our dependence on people that don't necessarily like us. Up until last year was the first year the United States has been the largest oil producer in the world, up until last year, but been 20, 25, 30 years before that, when we had been the largest oil producer. So certainly by reducing our oil dependence, moving towards electrics will help us do that. Go ahead and click. And just to give you a perspective on what electrics can do, what the potential they have to reduce the dependence on oil. One more. How are we going to do this, Klaus? I'm going to...
Here. The name's Klaus.
Klaus.
Okay.
Klaus.
Rhymes with house.
So just
and
to
just say click and I'll move on.
Okay. Click. Just to give you guys, I'm not going to read everything that's on here. You guys can do that. But just to give you a perspective on what oil does, most of the use of oil in the United States is on our transportation. That's what this 71% of the oil use is for, is for transportation. So just to give you some background on why and how, and this is not Sierra Club data. This is all, most of the information is being provided by a source at the lower right there behind the Christmas tree. Klaus? Did I say it right?
Klaus.
Okay. This is interesting. When I saw Britton first give this cost comparison between gasoline per 100 miles and electricity per 100 miles, because that $3.45 is exactly the number I'm seeing with my electric car. The true data is about 3 cents per 1 mile, or $3.45 100 miles, which I thought was really nice to see that the data is actually jiving. Klaus? So if we could increase, now plug-in electric vehicles, maybe we need to pause real quick and talk a little bit about, there's plug-in electric vehicles and then there's electric vehicles. The plug-in electric vehicles are the ones that can plug in the wall, and those also include the electric vehicles. My Chevy Volt can plug in the wall, but it also does have gas backup. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but if it can't plug in the wall, like a Toyota Prius that we normally see on the road, those are not a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. It gets electricity from the rolling kinetic energy that's in the wheels to recharge a small battery that's on board, and that assists the engine to provide the propulsion for that vehicle. Totally different than being able to plug it in a 110 jack in your wall at in your garage or at your house. Totally different. So when we talk about electric vehicles, we're also including plug-in electric vehicles, because a lot of the time you'll see that we'll be on electricity rather than the gasoline. Klaus? So one of the concerns is that our grid is not ready, that our electricity grid, you know, FPL, we've been coordinating with FPL for a couple years now and hearing about their studies and things, and if everybody bought an electric vehicle tomorrow, will we be able to power them? Will we have, you know, brownouts and things? Not at all going to be the case. There's plenty of juice, there's plenty of capacity within the existing grid in order to power these vehicles up till 2035 is what they're showing here. Klaus? So 1.5 million barrels of oil in 2035, if we could get the electric cars on the road. And this Union of Concerned Scientists 2013, this website, again, I can provide this later if you need it. This is a very independent, this isn't Sierra Club, this isn't Chris, this is an independent group of scientists that have done these studies and have come up with you know, this plan to reduce our oil in half in 20 years. Klaus? Climate change is here. I'm an environmental engineer, but at the same time, I'm pretty conservative in a lot of my morals, ethics, and I was trying to remember some of the
religion.
religion too, I suppose. But it is here, and we are contributing to it. How much, maybe, you know, we could argue that, but certainly what we're doing and how we're impacting our footprint on the earth is certainly a concern. Klaus? So if we can, you know, drive an electric car, and this is comparing using electricity. I know a lot of folks want to say that you're not polluting out of your tailpipe anymore, you're just polluting at the power plant. I've heard that a lot. There are a number of studies that have shown that the controls on a power plant, I visited the Manatee one just 2 weeks ago, a number of sequential controls on the air pollution devices at power plants, even the coal-burning power plant that I visited in school at UCF in Orlando, it's unbelievable, the layers and layers and layers. And when you have a federally regulated stationary power plant, that's completely different than millions of mobile tailpipes. And we don't even have a state inspection anymore, do we? We used to have state inspections a long time ago, right? Some states still do, but we don't even in Florida have that. So there's a number of studies that show between 35 and 60% less using an electric car, considering what source you're using at the power plant to create that electricity. Klaus? This is Florida, and I have a similar graph like this in my book about my juice. Where am I getting my electricity from? I'm within FPL. Most of us here are probably from FPL, but this is Florida-wide, and where our electricity comes from. Clearly, the number of coal-fired plants are less and less and less as we're moving forward. More and more of these plants are becoming using natural gas, which is much cleaner, uses less controls. But it still is a fossil fuel, understand. But that itty-bitty little purple sliver there is renewables. And that's so exciting to think about. Power in your car from the sun, power in your car from the wind, from hydrogeology, from all these other renewable sources, and moving yourself, and I'll get to it, but 100 miles an hour down the interstate you can go in these electric cars. Just amazing. Yes, sir. How do they compare? They're less. How much less? I don't know, but they're definitely less. There's also less particulate emissions. There's a PM10, size of the particulate that gets emitted, the dust essentially, and that's much, much less with natural gas than coal as well. So even the Manatee County plant can burn oil, which I never even knew they did that. Still, they don't like to because it costs so much. They use the natural gas whenever they can, but they can actually burn the oil in Manatee. I'm talking about the one way out east on State Road 62. Okay, Klaus? This is a good, better, best graphic of the United States, and this talks about where your energy is coming from. And so I don't... Klaus, click it one more time. I'm not exactly sure what these MPG numbers mean, but what it's showing is that in the dark blue areas, it's dirtier energy. It's dirtier. It's still not bad. It's still not burning gasoline in your car and out the tailpipe, but it's not as clean as the lighter blue or the very light blue. Okay, back up one. Can you back up one, Klaus, just to make sure that we got that right? Yeah, good is dark blue, and then medium blue is better, and then light blue is best. And that makes sense because, click it one more, California is light blue. So their energy is coming from cleaner sources. And that's what this graphic is showing. And this is 2009, right? Click it one more time, Klaus. Here's 2025. So you can see that our grid is getting cleaner. There's no question about that. And as more and more renewables come online, it's going to get even cleaner and more renewable, more sustainable. Kind of a neat comparison. Back up one more, Klaus. Here's 2009 data, and just in projecting in 15 years, there you go. And then, of course, there's still going to be some, what do they call that belt across the middle of the United States?
The Rust Belt.
The Rust Belt, thank you. That's exactly what I remember from my high school. Okay, thank you. Klaus? So putting 1 million electric vehicles on the road could reduce our emissions by 2.4 million tons per year. That's the 1 million cars on the road by... I think that's 2015. That was Mr. Obama's his goal, his vision a couple years ago. Klaus? Ozone is another reason we need to look at electrics. And it's funny because ozone's a good thing when it's way the heck up there. It helps take the sunlight and convert it and take that energy, and it doesn't give us the sunburn, right? That's what ozone does when it's in our atmosphere. But when it's down here, when it's being emitted out of our tailpipes, it stays here. And it's causing a lot of problems, a lot of respiratory issues with ozone. Go ahead. Here's three different issues. 1 in 10 children in Florida have asthma related to that because of the asthma. And again, the ozone contributes to that. Oop, go forward. One more. There you go. So it is an issue, and it is a permanent thing. You know, scar tissue on your lungs, that's not something that's going to just heal. It's going to take an awful long time, and especially if it's scarred. And ozone pollution is mostly from industrial activity, but also from the emissions of cars and trucks. I think there's a picture here somewhere. There we go. And again, that's the valley, that's the settling, that's what happens, that, you know, ozone's great when it's up there, but not when it's down here in a valley type, and that's because of temperatures and things. I asked Britton that this morning, and she didn't know where that was, but
looks like Los Angeles.
Looks like L.A. to me, yeah, that's what I would guess, too. Okay. And it's just, again, some kiddos dealing with ozone. So, I don't know why EPA is in here. I don't know what I'm supposed to say about EPA. Click it. here, maybe this is... Federal Code. Okay, they're saying that ozone is going to now become a parameter that they're going to sample and look for and set limits. That's why the EPA. They're going to get involved, and I'm sure it's going to depend on whether it's rural or urban, but they're going to try to set some type of a threshold that if you're above this, you need to start working on it, maybe even implement more electric vehicles to combat that. And this is our discussion here locally in Florida, trying to get Florida a little more on board with electrics. It isn't just the beaches. It isn't just the offshore drilling. It isn't just the air pollution. It isn't just our oil dependence. It's cost. That's the big thing I really want to tell you and share with you, is that the cost of driving electric is so much less. Maintenance on it is much less, but the cost of sending money to some other country that doesn't like me, that bothers me. Go ahead. This is what Britton and I have been working on for the last couple of years. At Suncoast Electric Vehicle Collaborative we had 3 meetings. They were public meetings. We invited as many stakeholders into to the meetings as we had. We had about 60 in each one of the meetings. The first was to identify the hurdles, identify the problems, identify the issues. The second was to try to come up with some of the solutions for and then the final was implementation. So, you know, identify the problems, come up with local solutions for those problems, appropriate signage, informational, like this. The map on the back of this shows all the charging stations in the area. A lot of people don't know. They don't know there's an app for your phone that will show you these charging stations. They don't know that app will even show you if someone's plugged in and using it or not, real time. All that information is out there, and it's been out there for 3 years now. So that's why I'm here, is to try to just get this information out to you. And that's what the purpose of that local collaborative event was. So that's really Britton's discussion. And really now, mine is more of a case study. Mine is more of, here's my real numbers. So Klaus, if we want to switch over... Does anybody have any other general questions about electrics in general, or?
You mentioned that a lot of these electrics will plug into your garage outlet, and yet you mentioned the charging stations. Why do I need a charging station if I can plug it into my garage?
Good question. 80% of us electric car drivers are going to charge at home. 80% of your charging is going to be done at home. Most of the cars can plug right in the wall. It takes a little bit longer. It takes 10 hours to fully charge my Chevy Volt at home, but I'm sleeping about that time every night, so you go home, you plug it in. The first 2 months that I owned that car, I just used that little charger. I did install a higher capacity charger at my house. It's $500, 3 wires, I did it myself. But you can have a faster charger on some of these cars. And these public charging stations are faster also. And they're out there for you to top off. They're not out there for you to use overnight, or, you know, they're out there for you to go downtown. Spend your money downtown. That's a big economic thing. We'll talk about that. But these charging stations are spending hubs. People are twiddling their thumbs. My favorite story, went over to see my mom and dad. They live in Brevard County, east coast of Florida. And we go across the state. My car got to about Arcadia, switched to gas. I use gas to get over to Brevard County. Well, I open up my phone and I look for charging stations just to see. And there's one at a Kohl's. There's one at a Nissan dealer, but I didn't think they were going to let me plug in my Chevy. So, but there was one at a Kohl's. I'd never been to a Kohl's. So I said, honey, why don't we stop at Kohl's real quick and go in. Free electricity, plugged in, went in, shopped. I got about 10 miles of charge, which got me to my mom and dad's house on electricity rather than gasoline. And while we were in Kohl's, my wife bought $400 worth of dishes. And I went to the manager and I said, look, first of all, I would not even be in your store if you didn't have that charging station out here. Second of all, I just bought $400 worth of dishes, you know. So I'm sharing that with you because these are if the businesses can understand what this is doing and bringing people to, and I'm twiddling my thumbs, I'm wasting my time. My wife happened to just pick out some nice, you know. But businesses really need to understand this, in particular hotels. That's a big one, huge hotels, because people are spending the night. They got the time. You might as well plug in your car. Yes, ma'am.
I used to live off the grid using batteries, and so...
Used to? How long ago?
Pardon?
How long ago? Used to?
Oh, way back.
Okay. Lead acid battery?
Early 80s.
Yeah.
Deep cycle.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm aware that if you don't... you get longer battery life if you don't totally drain your battery and charge as opposed to just keep topping it off. Is that the same?
Not the case anymore. Not the case. The chemistry is completely different than the batteries that you're used to. You probably had like a lead acid type battery, which is what the first original, some of you might have heard of the EV1, GM built that in the 1998. Those are golf cart batteries. And I was in it's a picture in my book, I was in a car show in Orlando in 1998, sitting in an EV1 dreaming about electric cars, 1998. And here I am 15 years later now, again, trying to promote the awareness of these cars. And that EV1 used lead acid batteries, and it went about 80 miles on a charge. And if you get a chance, there's two documentaries that are actually pretty cool. One, I know documentaries sometimes aren't really fun. There's Who Killed the Electric Car? And if you haven't seen that, you should see that. It's really good. But then the other one is called Revenge of the Electric Car, and it's done by the same guy. And he did it in about 2008, right when all this was starting to take off. And there's just some really cool heroes in there if you get a chance to see the old, most of us know Lee Iacocca, but how about Bob Lutz? Does anybody know that name, L-U-T-Z, Bob Lutz? General Motors. He was also at Ford. He was also at Chrysler. He was Mr. Detroit. That was his nickname, Mr. Detroit. Big V8s, big trucks, oil, cigar smoking. I mean, he's this larger-than-life man. But in this movie, they talk about his transformation of what are these people in California doing, this Tesla group, that are taking laptop batteries and making cars go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds? Who are these people? Why aren't we doing that here in Detroit? And he, to me, he's my hero. I got to meet him at the Detroit Auto Show last year. He was given a Lifetime Achievement Award for really championing this car. This Volt is like nothing, no other car is like it. It's completely different than all the others. But if you get a chance to watch that movie, Revenge of the Electric Car, he's in there, and the Nissan guy is in there, and some other big guys are in there.
I'm on my second Prius,
mm-hmm.
but I'd be interested. Is it a regular car?
It is a regular car. It's right out here, so I'll show it to you. Okay. It's about the size of it, a little bit bigger than a Prius.
And how often do you have to plug it in?
You don't ever have to plug it in. That's what's neat about the Volt. You only get 30... Let me get through this one, because this is more my presentation, and let me go through this, and then when we have more questions, because battery is a big issue too. We need to talk a lot about the battery and technology. They're lithium ions, like your phone now. They're lithium ion batteries now in these cars. These aren't lead acid. They're not nickel cadmium. Nickel cadmium was the chemistry that you did need to deplete it all the way before you charged it back up. That was that chemistry. Totally different chemistry now. Lithium ion is in everybody's phones, and it has been in there for almost 10 years now. tried and true, really, chemistry.
Before we go on, let me just remind people to please use the microphones. We are recording this, and we hope to put this on the web for future use. So if you have a question, I'd ask Deanna and David to pass out the microphone so that we can all hear you and we can record that. If you don't want to record it, let us know, and I'll turn the mic down for you. Thank you.
I'll go through this, and then we'll do more questions because I'm excited about the questions. Okay. Go ahead, Klaus. I think these three things are coming together. These are the three reasons why I think electrics are here to stay this time. I was real careful to put reduced fossil fuel supplies. I wanted to put, you know, increasing gas prices, but they've seemed to have plateaued in the last 2 years, ever since I wrote this book. I'm sure with a billion people in China and a billion people in India that want to drive, I am sure these gas prices are going to continue to go up. And we'll show you some graphs to show you kind of the projections of what that will look like. But certainly there's a finite amount on Earth, and certainly we are using it, and therefore it is being reduced. Okay, that's why I put that there. How many of us take a bag to Publix now? I mean, probably half of us take bags, right? How many of us did that 10 years ago? Wow. Oh, you guys are awesome. Okay, I didn't. And, you know, but I think we're more aware. We've got LEED certifications now. This Green Business Council has come on board in the last 10 years to really make us more aware of our impact on what we're doing, how long we're using the lights, what the air conditioning is set at. All those things are footprint, right? We're all more aware of it. And that's what this green movement is about down here. Not necessarily being green, but being more aware of our impact. And certainly, we've already talked about battery technology and where that's come from, and certainly where it's going. So those three things, I think, are the nexus here of why this evolution of electric vehicles. Comparing electricity versus gasoline. Click through this real quick, Klaus. I think I've got some check marks here. Who wins? Just one and one more. Cool. Cost volatility. The idea of a war on the other side of the earth affecting the cost of my commute to work is insane. That's insane. Why should I allow something on the other side of the earth affect how much it's going to take me to get to work when I have a choice? When we have a choice right here to use electricity. And then that choice also could be renewable, right? It is an alternative. It might not come from it right now, but it will, as more and more of these solars and winds and things come online. Availability. Electricity is everywhere. Some of us, I've had a lot of folks talk to me about the compressed natural gas, and maybe we should use that. And what would that take? Well, we're going to have to retrofit every gas station in the entire United States with compressed natural gas stations instead of the gasoline or electrical or something else. Electricity is already everywhere. We already have it everywhere. We already have it at our house. We already have it at our business. Yes, sir.
Can you recharge on 110 volts, and do you require
yes.
a three-wire outlet?
You have to have a good ground, yes, which is the third wire. And yes, you can charge on 110. That was the other question. I'm trying to repeat the question. There are much higher charging 240 and even 480 and even what they call a DC fast charging system is being developed right now for the really, really big battery cars. But the electricity is already everywhere. And that's, I guess, my point in this is that the availability of electricity versus gasoline, I actually have to drive to a gas station, whereas I've got electricity at my house, right? So just plug it into the wall, it's pretty easy to do. Production location, I did have that energy can only be made here. It's a domestic product. This is creating jobs in America, whether they're jobs creating the electricity or distributing the electricity or reading the meter. These are all jobs here. These are not jobs in some other country. But I did have to give a check mark for the production location because, as we talked about earlier, up until last year, the United States was actually the largest producer of gasoline, of crude oil in the world. Go ahead, Klaus. And let's see if this will work, Klaus. You might have to back it up. No, you let go.
I'm Chris Sherrick. This is my Chevy Volt. I've been so impressed with this car. I've been telling everybody I can about what the car can do and the minimal cost that I've had to put a little bit of gas into it. And I'm excited about putting together this book that really just summarizes my wonderful electric car and the costs and everything else that are associated with it. Hopefully people will decide to drive electric instead of driving these gas guzzlers. One of the biggest reasons why I started writing this book is that I feel that the electric car industry needs a boost, needs some additional marketing, some additional real world people talking about their cars rather than the industry, rather than a GMer, rather than someone that is selling these cars to talk about them, to share with the world what they do, how quiet they are, how efficient they are, and that's why I'm writing this book.
You get a little picture there of the car, so you kind of see the size. And that's at Lakewood Ranch. They have a charging station at Main Street right by the ice cream parlor there. And I make sure I try to get lunch at some place there because they have a free charging station when I go over there. They're one of my clients I work with. Okay, next. So this is why where we want to start from is, how do you decide to buy an electric car versus a hybrid versus a regular car? I mean, how do we get there? So let's go car shopping, and we're going to compare a 2013 Ford Fusion SE, which is like the regular old internal combustion engine. I'm going to call it an ICE, internal combustion engine. I refer to those as ICE vehicles because of that. It gets this information. It's cheaper to buy an internal combustion engine, right? That 23.7 versus a hybrid. But for some reason, some of us want to buy a hybrid. Why do we want to buy a hybrid? Click it one couple more times, Klaus, because they're the same car. They're essentially the same car, right? I mean, when you're comparing, when you guys go car shopping, they're the same car, except one gets much better gas mileage. So what do we have to consider when we're going car shopping and looking at the vehicles? It's on the tip of your tongue. What is it?
Total cost.
And what is the other component other than the capital? Fuel, operational, right? I mean, so let's look at gas prices. This is from the United States Energy Independence Agency. The blue line is the actual gas prices since 1994, about when I started driving. Since 1994, gas prices. And they were around just over a dollar. I remember paying 99 cents for gas. And this is across the United States. And here we are today. 2013, 2014, right under $4 a gallon. The red line is a projection. For some of you that are statistically inclined, that red line has a 0.91 R-squared value. That means that it's a pretty darn good fit of the data is what that means. So projecting. Let's take those two Ford Fusions we were just talking about, and let's look at this $4 a gallon. How far do I need to drive it? That's the mileage at the bottom. How far do I need to drive it in order for those total costs of ownership, that's exactly what we want to call that. TCO, whoa, 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 whoa. Are we back to?
Yes.
Okay. So that total cost of ownership, we're comparing. The blue line is the Ford Fusion, regular old, burning lots of gasoline. And the green line is the hybrid version. All right? Notice the slope of the blue line. It's steeper. What does that mean? It costs more to drive. The per mile is steeper. It costs more to drive. So at some point out there, though, at $3.80 a gallon, note the bottom there, $3.80 a gallon, it takes about 65,000 miles for those total costs of ownership to be the same. Now, that obviously doesn't, I mean, the tires on both the cars are going to be about the same. You know, all the other wear and tear on the car is going to be about the same. So I didn't include the maintenance, oil changes, and things like that. I didn't include the maintenance. This is just looking at capital and then fuel costs. So what if, Klaus, now you can click a couple times here, looking again at the same graph, this is something that I don't think we think about. When we go buy a car, a lot of us, a lot of younger folks, buy a car for 5 years, maybe seven, right? We finance it that far out. That's what we do because we can't necessarily afford to go buy it with cash. But do we think about what the gas prices are going to be in 5 years? Never. Why not? Do you think about what the air conditioning cost is going to be on that new home that you're going to buy? Absolutely. Why would you buy a bigger home just because you can afford it? What about the operational costs? So we really need to be thinking about that when we go looking at our next car. What are gas prices going to be? Are they going to be $6 a gallon in 2019? I don't know. But that's what the data's showing me. That's what that red line is projecting. And considering the 2 billion people on the other side of the earth, I don't know that that's going to be that far off. I really don't. It's eventual. It's really, whether it happens in 2019 or 2029, it is coming, right? So let's look at those that same Ford Fusion comparison using $6 a gallon, and that number that used to be 65,000 miles drops to about 40,000 miles. Klaus? So it only takes you 40,000 miles now to recoup or to make the total cost of ownership equal. Any questions on this so far? Yes, ma'am. And that's a great point. I'm glad you bring that up because it's a great question. It's not even counting the environmental impacts. And again, as an environmental engineer, as someone who cares a little bit more about how I'm leaving things for my kid, how do I put a dollar amount on that? I could argue that it is priceless. Some would say you can't really put a dollar amount on it. And where do I do it? And so in the book, I left that out. I have a paragraph in there about how important this is. But putting a dollar amount, fixing a dollar amount to that is challenging because it would be so scrutinized. But I think, thank you for bringing that up because it's a very, very important point. Click it real quick. And I think this is going to, a hybrid, a Prius, the technology in a Prius is the same technology that's in a Cadillac Escalade hybrid. Any of these hybrid vehicles are the same exact technology. They can't be plugged in. They can't. That's their definition. So these hybrid vehicles, like the Prius, like the Escalade, like the Camry, like the Accord, I think even has one now, they can't plug in the wall. They take that rolling energy, they charge a very small battery that's on board, and then that battery supplements the propulsion. It's not a means for transportation. So the bottom line, click, is that when we're looking at a hybrid, it costs more money up front. Absolutely, it costs more money up front to buy a hybrid than a regular car. It also provides similar capacity, comfort, maybe reduced operating costs because you're going to see with a hybrid, you're going to see lowered use of fuel. But similar performance, and it's completely dependent upon the distance driven, not the time you own the car. Doing this by years of payback and all that doesn't make any sense. Doing it by miles that you drove the car makes perfect sense. Yes, ma'am.
It seems that.
Yes, let's. Do we want to hold the questions till the end?
Let's hold them till the end.
Okay.
Go through
the chart that just went by.
Sorry?
I'm referring to the chart that just went by.
I don't know.
The chart that showed the total cost, it I believe the purchase price does not reflect the fact that there's a $7,500 tax credit off the purchase price, so it would bring that.
We haven't even got there yet,
okay.
And that's the next. So let me get through the slides, and then we'll do that. That's a good question, though. She's referring to a federal tax credit that's on the handout there, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But I want to summarize why we would buy a hybrid, because they cost more. They cost more. Why do we buy them? Go ahead. What if you could get a car that might need to be filled up once a month, carry four people, go 100 miles an hour, go 26,000 miles on 119 gallons of gas, and the first oil change might be at 75,000 miles? That's Jetsons, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's Jetsons stuff. But all of this, while being quiet, by polluting less, and I'm telling you, it is really, really fun to drive. This is what I've seen. This is why I wrote this book, because this is what I have done and seen. I have not done an oil change with 38,000 miles on that car. It's projecting that my first oil change will be at 75, 80,000 miles based on the time the engine's running, which isn't very frequent. Click. These are very, very unlike hybrids. Technically, this Chevy Volt is a hybrid. It uses gas, it uses electricity. It's a hybrid. But it's a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. It plugs in the wall. The first 40 to 50 miles are all electric. That was one of your questions earlier, how far can you go on it? 40 to 50 miles, depending on everything. But you have plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, PHEVs. Sometimes they're called extended range electric vehicle. Extended range because it has a gas backup. So it's an electric vehicle first, and then it has an extended range gas engine that helps it afterwards. It's actually a generator. But you can get 50 to 250 miles per gallon with these vehicles. I'm seeing 235. 235 miles per gallon, that is the average of my vehicle over the last 2.5 years. Average. Battery electric vehicles, BEV or EVs. Those are what we know as the electric cars, the Nissan Leaf, the Tesla. There will be a number of other vehicles that are shown on there. I think the first 6 are electric, and the last 4 are plug-in hybrid electrics on your handout. Sorry about the small font, but there's a lot of data to try to fit on the fit on that sheet. But the entire source of power is from a battery. It never, ever needs gasoline. So looking back at this, $3.80 a gallon of gas. Let's compare a Chevy Volt. Go ahead and click, Klaus, a couple more. One more, there we go. This is my comparison with a traditional internal combustion engine. I didn't want to pick a particular car because I didn't want to pick on the Camry or pick on the BMW 3 Series. That's a perfect example. That car starts about $40,000. I could compare that car, but it'd be way off the chart just starting, right, at mile zero. I think you could argue that if you get a Camry that's kind of loaded with the same features as a Volt, it could be a $29,000 vehicle. So that's what I did. I took a $29,000 vehicle, and I compared it, back up real quick, Klaus. I wasn't quite done. With the, and you can see the slope of the line, about 60,000 miles is where the total cost of ownership between that vehicle getting, where's my little, I've lost my little card. I forget what the, I think it was 34 miles per gallon. This is 34 miles per gallon because that's the average miles per gallon of vehicles in the United States. And that's what I used for the basis of calculation. So again, at $3.80, the original cost of my Volt is showing there about $33,000, let's call it. That price has come down by $5,000 since I wrote the book. That's the GM price. Then there is a $7,500 federal tax credit that comes off of that price. So my MSRP, the sticker price on my vehicle was $42,000. I paid $35,000. Essentially, because I got my $7,500 federal tax credit back. If you pay that much in taxes, you get that back. And I know some folks might not pay that in taxes, but that's the way it works, because that's the mechanism that the government has in order to give you that money. In Georgia, this is ironic as heck, and a number of other states, in Georgia, you can get another $5,000. $5,000 in addition to the $7,500 if you live in Georgia, because they have a state income tax there. So again, if you pay that in taxes, you get that back at the end of the year. There's a number of other states. I have a website in my book that talks about where to go and how you can find. I'm sure you can search for that. But there are probably about 20 states that have additional incentives. Florida's not one of them, which is all the reason why we're trying to get Rick Scott to figure out how to promote the awareness. Florida, because of its flatness, is a great state for EVs. Going up over the mountains, that uses a lot of juice, that climb. Yes, you regenerate a lot of it on the way down, but it does use a lot to get up. But being so flat, Florida's a terrific, terrific state for electric vehicles. Let's take this same graph, click a couple times, Klaus, we'll go all the way through to the looking at $6 a gallon. And where would that be if we're, again, comparing the Volt to that $29,000 car? You know, now we're talking 30,000 miles. That's not far at all. And again, depending on, you know, this is again looking at $33,000 for the Volt, and it's much less now. And then you take your tax credit off that. So it really is making a lot more CENTS sense to look at electrics. Klaus? So kind of, here's another way to look at it. This is a great example. The assumptions are on the right there. I'm only using 22 miles per gallon and a $23,000 car. Because that's the window sticker. That's the comparison on the window sticker of my car. That's the EPA comparison. When they do comparisons of which car's greener and all that, that is the information that they're using to do that. So the top cost of the car, the capital cost of the car, is $23,000. That's the internal combustion on the left. That pink area is the capital cost of the car. $33,000 for that Chevy Volt. Gosh, that's a lot of money, isn't it? That blue bar is the amount of gas you're going to spend at $3.80 a gallon for 8 years. Now, I'll guarantee it's not going to stay $3.80 per gallon for 8 years, but even if it does, you're going to spend $21,000 almost on gasoline in the next 8 years on that vehicle. And the Volt, you might spend $2,200, and again, that's based on my actual costs. I projected how much gasoline I've used over the last year, annualized it, put it in there. The $34.47 is the cost of electricity. Electricity might go up too, but it's certainly not going to go up anywhere near in the volatile fashion or the percentage. I mean, just in the sheer volume, the numbers, they're not going to go up anywhere near. We have things like the Public Service Commission that govern these things that don't allow FPL to increase our rates by more than X percent. One more way to look at this. I like to cut this a couple different ways. Go ahead, class. This far right column, gas at 11 miles per gallon cost me in my Jeep that I had 34 cents every mile I drove it. The next one to the left, gas at 22 miles per gallon, that's that EPA car we just looked at. Costs about 17 cents per mile to drive that vehicle. Gas at 37 miles per gallon, that's what I get in my Volt when I'm not using electricity. I said you can never plug it in. No, you don't ever have to plug the Volt in. It can use gas and just fill it up just like you would a regular car. I don't know why you'd buy a Volt and not plug it in, though, but that's where you'd be, about 10 cents a mile, and that's based on my actual data. 10 cents a mile is what I've seen. On the far left, electricity, that's that 3 cents a mile, just over 3 cents a mile that was in Britton's presentation also. Hers was $3.45, 100 miles. It's the same number. The cost in between here, I've seen 85% of my driving is on electric, 15% is on gasoline. So that's what 4 cents. So overall, my cost has been about 4 cents a mile to drive that vehicle. Go ahead, Klaus. So why would you consider an electric car or a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle? Costs more money up front, but it's the same car. Similar performance, totally depends on the distance driven. Do these bullets look familiar? Click it, Klaus. These are the same reasons we justified buying a hybrid. But instead of going from 30 miles per gallon to 35 miles per gallon, you might go from 30 miles per gallon to 200 miles per gallon. That's the level that's what these electrics do. So for people to justify buying a hybrid because they think they're going to get the gas back in a couple years, look at an electric because it's exponentially better. Go ahead, Klaus. Why would we change? Why would we change? There's so many, can just continue to do what we do, right? Here's that picture. There's me in an EV1. My girlfriend took that picture in 1998. Wow. She's my wife now, so I could use it. Otherwise, she might not let me use it. But yeah, that was in 1998 at a car show in Orlando. And that's the EV1, all electric, 80 miles of range back then. Click it, Klaus. And these are the dreams. This is from my scrapbook. This is from my college scrapbook. That I cut out all these little things to remind myself of why this car is what it is. It's a very, very unique. They built about 3,600 of them, and they leased them only because there were issues with charging, and they want to put a charging station in and everything. And then once they sold the battery patent to ExxonMobil, they collected all the cars and crushed them. And it's just really, really sad that was 98. Think about where we could be now if we had kept going with the technology and the development. So, one more, Klaus, I think. Yeah, this is the question I get at the light. You know, the guy rolls his window down and he says, how do you like driving that thing? That's the way I usually, because people don't know if it's, is it a hybrid? Is it electric? Is it a catch on fire? There's an article about 1 volt that they tested. They rolled it over a bunch of times and it caught on fire 7 days later. And you would have thought that, and they didn't follow all the safety procedures and they didn't do anything. Let me share one other thing with you. Over here at Sunset Chevy,
what does real-time driving feedback mean?
There's a number of different screens on the Volt that tell you whether you're being green or not, instantaneously, not afterwards, not things like leafy little ball. I mean, I think the Prius has something similar, right, where you're being nice and you're, if you get out of line, it lets you know and that kind of thing. It's real time, and it's right there on the screen. What was I going to? Oh, Sunset Chevy, they're a certified Volt. I mean, most of these places are that sell the Volts. They're one. The mechanic at Sunset Chevy that's been working on cars for 35 years, last year bought a Volt. I mean, if that doesn't say, that just says volumes. That there is this technology that's here, it's tried, it's true, it's tested, it's here for us for the taking. So I think that's it. If anybody wants to ask questions now with the microphone, let's make sure we...
Let's follow what our pattern is. Generally, we try to alternate sides. Deanna has a mic over there. And why don't we start on your side? And we'd like to give everybody a chance to ask a question. But speak into the mic, please.
Hi, Chris.
Hey.
I was at a little exhibit a couple of years ago. I think it was out at St. Armand's, where they had a bunch of different electric cars. And the Volt was one of them. But there was also a Tesla and a bunch of others. It would be helpful to understand why you're concentrating on the Volt, what makes it different from some of these others. And secondly, what is it with these people making lavish luxury versions of cars, like the Tesla, I believe, that cost $75,000 when, you know, a big selling point is economy?
Very good questions. I'll take the first one. I was at that event. I helped organize that event 2 years ago. That was our plug-in day in 2012. And the one that I met Deanna at was in 2013. We had it at Moat Marine this year. Similar event. Tesla has, because of the cost, they've said their base model is a $57,000 car. It is still eligible for the $7,500 federal tax credit. So that, I mean, $50,000 is still a lot for a car. They have discussed coming down with a lower version model of it. If you know anything about that company, they had some financial issues. Even though they had this millionaire that it funded them initially, they had some financial issues they had to overcome. And so setting that bar and going after that market has really paid off for them. If you followed their stock or anything like that, they're doing phenomenal. But they do have plans for a vehicle in 2015. That might be in the $30,000 range. Lithium ion is not cheap either. The battery chemistry is not cheap. However, the GM is coming out with a Chevy Spark. It'll be a $25,000 car. Initially, at the end of this year, it will hit about five different states. And again, those five states are the ones that have the incentives. They won't be in Florida yet. But maybe next year, we'll see these GM Sparks. It's a very small car. It goes about 80 miles, all electric. And it'll be 25 grand, then it's eligible for the $7,500. So it'll be less than 20 grand for this electric vehicle. Don't get me wrong, the electrics are not an end-all cure-all, okay? My other car is a Jeep, you know, our other car, the Wrangler. So we have to tow the boat, you know, we have to carry the dogs sometimes to go hiking, things like that lumber. Electrics aren't an end-all cure-all, but maybe you have that Spark in the garage and you use that for almost all your driving, and then you got that pickup truck for when you need to go to Home Depot or something. Almost like a hybrid garage, I call it, you know? You had one other question. Why am I focused on the Volt? That's been my car for the last 2.5 years. I'm a big proponent of buying American, supporting us, supporting what we are. This innovation of this vehicle surpasses anything. They called it a moonshot in 2011 as the Motor Trend Car of the Year. They tried to tell Bob Lutz, we can put more batteries on it. We don't need a gas engine. He said, no. 80% of us drive 40 miles or less. 80% of us drive 40 miles or less per day. That's what he went after. That was the target. And so this car goes about 40 miles, all electric, and then it switches to gas for when I have to go see my mom and dad on the other coast. If I could afford a Tesla, I might. That might be. But I'll tell you right now, I'll never go back to an internal combustion engine vehicle ever in my life. I always wanted a Corvette. Not until they're electric. It's just not ever going to happen.
Next question is over here.
Is the differential cost and the capital cost, is that going to go down in the future as the technologies improve, batteries become cheaper, and so forth?
Absolutely.
Because that can make all the difference in the future, because eventually, even the capital cost won't be very much different.
I was going to let you finish your question. That's a great point, and let me give you some data to support it. You know, when I bought my car, there were three cars you could buy. There was a Nissan Leaf, there was a Tesla, and there was a Volt. Those are the three cars that were out there in 2011. That was it. Last year, I think they had, I forget who it was, there was a fourth that came on board, but now there's 13. I went to the Detroit Auto Show in January of last year. Not a place you want to go in January, but it was fantastic because the number of electric vehicles that are coming out in 2014 is showing that exponential growth. I've got another chart somewhere that talked about the first 3 years of hybrids, the adoption of hybrids back in 2000 when the Prius came out, it's linear. The first 3 years that people bought cars, there was 20,000 sold, 40,000 sold, 60,000 sold. It was a linear adoption rate. The trend of electrics is exponential. The number of vehicles that are being sold each year. Another good example. It took them 9 months, since December of 2011, I bought mine in May of 2011, it took them 9 months, Nissan, Chevy, and Tesla, to sell 10,000 cars. 9 months to do that. In August of last year, they sold 10,000 cars in that 1 month. So the number of these vehicles that are out there is exponentially taken off.
Well, that wasn't really my question.
Okay.
The question was whether or not the difference in cost of the hybrid electric or the straight electric as compared to a standard internal combustion engine car, is that difference going to decrease?
The difference will decrease, absolutely. And I was trying to answer it with the number of vehicles in that the manufacturers are recognizing this. The manufacturers see that we could get an electric car that doesn't have a transmission, that doesn't have a, there's so many other components that electrics don't have that wouldn't be needed. And I was trying to answer your question by showing you that the manufacturers are driving this. And the cost will be between the internal combustion engine and the electrics will come down. It costs more money to buy an electric car. It up front, absolutely it does. It's new technology, and that's the way things are. If you want the new Apple iPad, you gotta pay more than the one you got before. But there's benefits. Some of the other benefits I haven't mentioned are I haven't been paying my road tax. You know, when you buy gasoline, portion of it goes to pay for the roads you're driving on. I really haven't been paying my fair share. Now they're talking about trying to charge me per mile. But until they figure that out, I'm 2.5 years in the clear. These public charging stations are free. All my data, I assumed I paid 10 cents a kilowatt hour for them because I wanted to be conservative in all my numbers. But there are so many other little benefits that are just, when you add them all up, looking at electrics and the cost of electrics versus internal combustion. Sir.
I've never ridden in a Volt. But just looking at it, it looks like it's a rather stiff, a little bit smaller car. How would that car be on long-term driving, long road, over-the-road driving, like driving to my home in Charlotte, 660 miles? Would it wear you out on that kind of driving, that kind of car?
I went 200 miles for Thanksgiving to go see my mom and dad. I've never had a car ride as nice as it does. It's the most quiet vehicle I've ever been in. The doors are all triple sealed. The seats are all maneuverable every which way, up, down, forward, back. The steering wheel telescopes too, not just tilts, but it also telescopes. Heated seats are standard in all the Volts because it takes less electricity to heat the seats than it would the air. There's things like that that GM thought of, that they put that standard in all the vehicles. The Leaf is not that way. One other thing about the Volt rather than the Leaf I do want to mention is that the Leaf is an air-cooled battery. It has no coolant that surrounds that battery pack, and as we know, batteries heat up when they're discharging, and they need to be maintained in a certain temperature range. And if there was a coolant to do that, like in the Tesla or like in the Volt, that coolant could not just extend the life of the battery, but also improve its performance. So the Volt has a liquid-cooled system that surrounds the battery and the Tesla as well, which is totally different than the Nissan Leaf that in Florida get pretty hot, and in Michigan get pretty cold. So that those ranges really, I think, help with the battery life. Come sit in and I'll give you a ride. You can go take a ride. I'd love for you to take a ride. I was just amazed with no shifting. You give it gas. You give it gas. You hit the accelerator, and you go. It is a linear acceleration. There is no shifting. There is no jolt. I had a rental the other day and I hated it. It's shifting. It is just the smoothest ride, even at 70, 75 miles an hour. It's just really smooth. The aerodynamics on it, they say, are have a lower coefficient of drag than a vet. Maybe not that new vet that's gorgeous, but have a very, very low coefficient. And that's why some of the lips and things, kind of like the Prius has those lips on the back end. It's all for aerodynamics.
Take away all the fun of driving a stick shift.
And Florida being an air conditioning state, how does that affect the numbers?
Great question. I have seen, if I get on the interstate driving's bad for electrics because of the regenerative braking. You're not getting the benefit of the regenerative braking. Around town, I got 57 miles one day on a charge with the windows cracked, not using the air, and just driving around town and taking it easy. But I got on the interstate with the air conditioner on, and I went about 37 miles on a charge. So it totally depends on that, and it does affect it, I would say, about 10% is what I had to put a number on it. But normally I'm seeing 50 miles. Right now I'm seeing 50-plus miles on a charge because I don't use the air. Crack those windows. It's 70, 60 degrees this morning on the way to work. I mean, beautiful. Just a comment on your stick shift. The Jeep is a stick. But I took my $7,500 federal tax credit and I bought my first Harley with it. So I get my fun with that and shifting. I bought a Harley, a motorcycle, so I can get my fix on the shifting. Like, because you, I agree with you.
A hybrid electric motorcycle.
They have an electric motorcycle called a Zero. I drove it. Haps has them over here on 17th Street. Go check those out. They're made in California. All lithium ion. They go about 100 miles. On a charge. I don't know how fast they go, but they're pretty darn quick when I test drove it.
David, I wanted to make a couple comments on this subject, and I'll just start with the motorbike. I went to a meeting about 5-6 years ago, and they were talking about electric on bikes, and that's right after I'd overwhelmed myself by riding from Sarasota Memorial Hospital all the way up to Anna Marie Island in August and back, and once I crossed that bridge, I said, I'm toast. Had I had an electric motor, I could have made it home. And so those can be installed on bicycles, and there's a guy in town that does it for about $300. About 5 years ago, I rode an electric scooter. And once you ride an electric scooter, you would never consider a gas scooter because an electric scooter goes and a gas scooter goes all over the neighborhood. And that's noise pollution. back to the electric cars, I drive a gas guzzler. And my gas guzzler is 10 years old, so I am, flirting with getting a new car. And so I'm trying to learn a lot about these. I have test driven the Leaf, and I have test driven the Volt. And in the test drive, I would say they're similar. They're very smooth. Both salespeople that were with me says, don't you enjoy the get up and go? Well, I'm not one that does this at the stoplight, but, I'm sure they both got that get up and go. There was no slowness to it. One of the things that took me a while to learn was the three categories of cars. And I want you to correct me if I'm wrong here. But there is the Prius style, where there is no plug into that one, and you have some electric that's made from the recharging of the electric motor when you brake or from the kinetic force that you were talking about. Then there is the category like the Nissan Leaf that I drove, and that is all electric. It's got a pretty long range, but if you happen to exceed that range and you didn't plug in and you're not at a charging station, you would have to have a tow truck to get it to a charging station or back home or to an electric plug someplace. That's one. That's the second category. Now, the third category is the one the Volt is in, which I think is the Utopia. Not everybody needs it, but, for the most well-rounded car, it's an electric plug-in, which is where you'll get most of your propulsion from. But when you need gasoline, it auto-switches into gasoline for you. I had a friend or an acquaintance I ran into who said, I hadn't used my gasoline, and 3 months went by, and so this light came on that said, okay, you got to run on the gasoline now because we're going to empty that tank so you can put a little fresh in there. So it's totally automated. It does everything. So in the big picture, it was hard for me to wrap my head around, you know, the one that runs on a little bit of electric, but there's no plug-in, the one that is all electric, and the one that's electric and gas. Those are the three basic categories.
That's exactly
okay,
correct.
So we have our head wrapped around that pretty well. So most of you I know won't be buying a car. You'll all be getting electric scooters, so you can head on up to HAPS. But for those getting electric cars, you know, it is a really nice feel. And the Volt is a little more luxurious than the Leaf. The Leaf is, kind of a bare bones experience. And the Volt is a very nice car on the interior. I mean, it's sporty and, you know, it's got more room in the back and, you know, the sides and everything. Very nice.
And for those of you who are Cadillac drivers, there is a Cadillac coming out in January that I went to the Detroit Auto Show to see. This was the car I went to see. It is a Volt drivetrain on a two-door Cadillac coupe called an ELR. It is, the interior on this car is unbelievable, but it has a Volt drivetrain. So at first is electric and then it has gas backup. So if you wanted something, if you could afford $75,000, well, Cadillacs, I mean, come on, I think regular Cadillacs are probably that price. I don't know. I don't own one, but
I know the Escalade is that price.
It's coming out in January. It'll be out in January. ELR.
And this gentleman had a question.
First of all, my scooter gets about 75 miles to a gallon.
Awesome.
And I put about 5,000 to 6,000 miles a year on it and about 2,000 on the gas guzzler. But that wasn't my question. My question is, I think, or actually it's a statement. I think you missed the collateral damage that gasoline is doing to our country, and particularly in the health field. I don't think there's a way to probably figure the cost of it, but I think it should be brought out more.
Couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more, and it really ties in with what you had asked me earlier about the environmental impacts, and I wish there was a way to put a dollar amount. There are some things in the works. There's some discussion about carbon credits, that if you're going to build a car that only gets 11 miles per gallon, you've got to pay, you know, basically a tax, essentially, as an automaker. If you're going to do that, you need to pay a tax to essentially pay for the dirtiness that you're creating. So I don't know where those things are right now, but hopefully something like that might get implemented and might address those issues.
We have a sin tax for alcohol, for whatever else you want. Why not for that?
It's a good point. There are some cars that have a gas guzzler tax. There is such a thing called a gas guzzler tax, and it's for the really high-end Challenger, Dodge Challenger. Anybody even know that vehicle? It's a little two-door Dodge thing that's really fast. But what's the point?
What about the Hummer?
Hummer got tax credits because it was a farm vehicle. I mean, there was so many loopholes with that vehicle. But I appreciate everybody's questions. I'd love to answer more.
Hi. I own a standard Prius for 5 years, and I love the car. I understand the way that car works, and I understand basically how the Chevy Volt plug-in hybrid works, but I don't quite understand the plug-in Prius. It's a different technology than the Volt, I assume. Can it, if you plug it in overnight, does it run exclusively on electric for a while, or is it always the electric supplementing the gasoline motor?
Yes and no. I hate to answer that way, but I've done a lot of work on that particular car. It goes a whopping 12 miles on a charge. They claim 12. I'm hearing 11 on a charge until you hit 62 miles an hour. So I get a mile away from my house, and I get on the interstate when I go to work. So right then and there, it's going to switch over. It doesn't have enough juice to get it up to the speeds that you need it for interstate driving or anything like that. Also, big issue, it's not eligible for the $7,500 federal tax credit. Its battery's too small. So why did they put that small of a battery in that car that was a very good car when it came out in 2000 and 2000 all the way through 2007? Great car, don't get me wrong. But they didn't really think about how this fits into the bigger picture of federal tax credits and everything else. It's only eligible for half of that money, $3,750. Same thing with those Fords. The Fords that are shown on there as well, their batteries are so small, other than Focus. I'm talking about the plug-in hybrids, like the Prius, the Volt, there's two Fords on there. The batteries are so small that they're not eligible for the $7,500. They're only $3,750.
Anybody on that side? I'd like to make a statement and ask a question. When you're figuring your costs, there's one item that might go in, and that's the time value of money, which you didn't use. It's not huge, but it is a factor, particularly the longer you go out. My question is there any thought or ideas coming that would enable electricity to be come from the sun while you're driving, or from the highway while you're driving, that some way you could get that power?
Good questions, and solar is always, I mean, to me, that's just the way we need to be moving. It takes a lot of infrastructure improvement. You'll notice on the map there's four locations that are shown as a charging station with a little sun next to them. They have a solar array nearby. So all day long, that solar array is putting electricity in the grid. When I pull in with my car, I'm pulling back out of that grid and plugging it in my car. So in essence, I'm using the sunshine to drive the car. So some of these locations have that ability. It's not taking sunlight directly into the car because, I'm getting back to your question about, could we put solar on the roof of a vehicle, or could we put a road that has solar on the top and connects to the vehicle? The density for photovoltaic right now is not there. I asked how big of a blanket would I need to unroll in the parking lot of my Arthur Anderson where I work. Could I put a blanket on three parking spaces and plug it in my car all day long and use solar? And the guy said it'd take three, maybe five parking spaces in order to get enough juice to be even the equivalent of a 110 jack, which is not a whole lot of electricity. So the density for photovoltaics is not quite there in order to do roof or things like that. But there are locations where all day long they're putting in the grid and you can pull back out and put it in your car.
Are the oil companies opposed to this technology, and what are they doing about it?
Man, what a great question. One of the reasons I'm so frustrated with GM, I mean, I've had discussions with people in Detroit. I've told them about writing this book. I've told them I'm an owner. They don't want to market this car. They don't want to market this car. How many people have seen a commercial for a Volt? Come on. How many people have seen a commercial for a Silverado in the last week? I mean, for some reason, they don't want to market the car. And I'm trying to answer your question because I think it's still, GM still has some hands in some deep oil pockets. I really believe that. And I don't know why they're not marketing this car, because this is absolutely an engineering marvel, what they've done.